Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds are talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artist.
Hello, Brian. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello there.
Boney James, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you guys.
Layla, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Music.
This is the Jazz Queen with the Smooth Jazz News Minute.
With the smoothest show on internet radio, your hosts, the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds.
Hello and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz, where you meet the artists. Welcome to our evening edition on a Monday, November 15th, 2010. My name is Terry, a.k.a. the Jazz Queen in Las Vegas. My co-host Mike Reynolds in Baltimore. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great tonight, sorry. How are you doing tonight out there in Vegas?
Oh, we doing well, hanging in there. Join us in the chat room along with a couple of guests, Lori G, Smooth, Wave Jazz, Jazzy Blue, and Gabe, Cheryl. Thank you all for joining us in the chat room. You can join us as well by going to TalkingSmoothJazz.com, clicking on the TSJ Radio Show page, and then the Play Chat button underneath the Kevin Whalum Show. You can also call in and speak with Kevin on 646-716-5485, 646-716-5485. Our guest this evening is R&B singer Kevin Whalum. He is the brother of Kirk Whalum. And we are so excited to have him on the show. His current project is called One Life, Two Love. Kevin Whalum, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Terry.
Well, it was our pleasure to have you on. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. Thank you to Cheryl Boone, who worked so tirelessly, I think, to get this thing
yes.
on. Thing going, so let's make sure she gets the shout out early.
Definitely. All right, well, let's start with your family. Now, you come from a very prominent family in Tennessee, the Whalums. Your father, Reverend K.T. Whalum, was a minister, and then your brother is Kirk Whalum. So, what was it like growing up in the Whalum family?
Well, it was certainly a peaceful environment. You know, I had a great dad. We lost him in 2007, but he was just a giant of a man to me and to many people in Memphis particularly. He was a civil rights era preacher and civic leader. He was a city councilman in the 80s and 90s. So he was a very heavy presence in the city. As a matter of fact, upon his death, actually, I think it was a week before he passed away, President Bush signed into law an effective name change of the main post office in Memphis to honor him by name, so it's now the K.T. Whalum, Kenneth T. Whalum Post Office. And my father was an executive with the post office at least 25 years. I can't remember the number, but he left his post permanently to preach and pastor full time in the early 80s. But he had done so much even up to that point for people and in the post office system that he was honored with President Bush's signature. So it's a federal law. It's a federal post office, and his name is attached. So I'm very proud to be his son.
And now there's also a boulevard named for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's been in place for a while. And he was such a trailblazer. I mean, he was such a revered, fearless leader, you know, and you're talking about Memphis, Tennessee, okay? We're not talking about North Dakota, South Dakota. We're talking about the South, civil rights era. You had to stand up for yourself. And he was one of the ones who stood up for not only himself, but for his followers. And my two brothers and myself follow in his footsteps when it comes to speaking our minds. And I think we got it honest, you know. You've heard that saying,
mm-hmm.
They got it honest, you know. Yeah, well, we got it honest when you think about the stances my dad took. Well, the three of us, and there are only three boys and no girls in the immediate family. I do have a sister, but she lives in the D.C. area. But when you talk about the just being able to stand up for yourself, we learned that at his knee. And it didn't get any better. And he was very articulate, which, as you know, in the black community could be the thing that separated you and made you a leader, even if you didn't want to be. If you could speak the king's and the queen's English, then you could lead without even being a person who wanted to do so. And he was painfully articulate and made sure that his sons were as well.
Mm. All right. So now, having Kirk as your brother, has that opened any doors for you that you think you would have taken longer for your voice to be heard?
You know, I say to him, and I have said to him both publicly and privately, that were it not for his introduction, presentation of me to the masses, to the recording community and to the listening community at large, I'm not sure where I would be, how far along I would be. Because when you have somebody that has worked as hard as he has and as diligently as he has for so many years, who's built the kind of reputation that he has and the you know, just the image of a guy who's just normal, approachable, Christian, somebody who wears his beliefs on his sleeve. When you talk about being associated with a guy like that, it flies in the face these days of what mm-hmm. is accepted as normal behavior. When you think about, you know, T.O. and Randy Moss and all of these entitled people that we see and hear, when you have somebody with humility introduce you in such a loving and careful way, through putting me on his CDs and taking me out on the road with him and presenting me, featuring me even on his concert. You can't pay for that. I guess you could, but I didn't have to. I'm so grateful to him for the way he has loved on me. That's an old Southern phrase. The way he has loved on me as his little brother. I love telling people I'm his little brother because even though I'm a big dude, I'm bigger than both my brothers physically. But I am the baby, and I don't hesitate to remind either of them that I am the baby because the older I get, the more I want to be the baby. When I was younger, I hated being called the baby, but now I want people to know how much older they are than I am.
Let me just make a comment. I absolutely love the duet that you do with Mesa on the Gospel According to Jazz, the Make Me a Believer song.
That's actually Layla Hathaway. That's not Mesa. I have done a duet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But the duet with Mesa was called There's Nothing Better Than Love, and that was also a Luther Vandross remake that we recorded together on. It was a collaboration record. It was a tribute, a Luther Vandross tribute CD called Forever for Always for Luther, Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That came out,
mm-hmm.
I want to say, in 07, 08. I can't remember. I think it was 08. And so Mesa and I recorded that. But Layla and I recorded yet another Luther tune that I rewrote the lyric to. You remember Make Me a Believer was a very cool tune that he did in the 80s. And
yes.
I rewrote the tune to give it a gospel vibe and a gospel lyric, and recorded it with Layla. And we just received, Terry, a Stellar Award nomination for Best Video.
Hmm. Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, my apologies to Layla Hathaway and Mesa for getting it mixed up. My apologies to you ladies for that. But I absolutely love that song. And you know, you sound a little bit like Luther in that song.
Wow. Now, I've never heard that. I appreciate it. I'm not sure Luther would appreciate it, but I do appreciate that. That's a compliment if I ever heard one. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, you're welcome. You're welcome. So, okay, Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now, I was going to ask Kevin, now, you grew up singing in the church, but you were also in the Morehouse Choir. Now, did that contribute to your overall sound, the way you performed it?
That's a very astute question, my brother. Nobody has asked me that before, and it has. The Morehouse College Glee Club is an historic organization that my uncle, my father's brother, was the second director of that organization, and he passed away in 87. But at that point, he had been at the helm of that organization for 35 years. And when I, as a matter of fact, the reason I wound up at Morehouse was because when I was 9 or 10, my oldest brother Kenneth Jr. Was at Morehouse, and Kirk went to Texas Southern in Houston, but KT, we call him KT, went to Morehouse. And so we're talking the mid-70s. And when they came, when the Glee Club took their spring tour, they came home to Memphis, to the home church, as it were, for a lot of the guys in the Glee Club. So we all went to the concert. And because my family had a position of prominence, you know, the director was my uncle, and my brother was in the Glee Club. We were on the front row. Okay, so I'm 9 or 10, and I'm already in love with both my brothers anyway. They're heroes to me. And I see them come out. They have this thing that they call Moving with Dispatch. And you see 44 black men in tails, tuxedos. Okay, black tuxedos. Tails. We're not running down the aisle, but moving with dispatch and taking their place in the choir stand in a blur. I mean, it was the most impressive thing I had ever seen at that age. And then they stopped on a dime. My uncle came out from behind the behind the choir stand and took his place, you know, took his bows and everything, and turned around, tapped on the music stand. And they started singing, and I try to tell you, Mike, I was mesmerized. I was absolutely mesmerized at what I was hearing. The harmonies, there is, in my mind, very little that compares to the collaborative sound of black men in particular, because of what we have come up against just to still survive in this world. I mean, it's almost like, I imagine it would be akin to a Native American hearing a Native song written, you know, because when was the last time you even saw a Native American? But the emotion that is attached to that never left me, and it was at that moment that I said, I don't really know what college is all about. I was only 9 or 10, but I want to go right there. I want to go to Morehouse. And I never had, you know how you take your ACTs and your SATs and you list your top three schools, you know, and then you mail everything off. I wrote Morehouse and sealed the envelope. Because I just figured that's where I'm supposed to be. And when I got there, my uncle was still there. You know, he was there for 2 years before he passed. Well, I was there for 2 years. So I got under him and learned from him in a different way, as opposed to just being his nephew. And it changed my paradigm. It really did. I began to hear things differently. I began to appreciate more intellectual sounds. I began to dig deeper within myself to come up with my own sound. And it never left me. It never left me.
Okay. All
wow.
Right, cool.
What a great what a great impression. Wow, that's a great story.
Now, after you graduated from Morehouse, you moved to Chicago, where you were a pharmaceutical sales rep during the day, and you played with a band called Fast Forward at night. Now, tell us about that.
That was my first band. When I got to Chicago, it was the day that the Bulls won the first championship.
So you remember
of
that,
those,
huh?
Right, of those six. I remember because that was the day I got there. So it was a day in June, and so I guess I just wanted to see. I didn't have a job lined up. I was one of the few people who graduated without a job lined up. So I knew I had to start looking for work. And in the middle of looking for work, I would go out at night to different, because Chicago is a great music city. So you don't, it doesn't have to be the weekend for you to go out and hear some good music. So pretty much every night of the week, I would go out to a different listening spot and listen to jazz, and at the band's break, I would go and introduce myself to everybody in the band. And another thing I got to say for Kirk, you know, had it not been for the work he had already put in, when I said, my name is Kevin Whalen, they said, whoa, are you Kirk's brother? I said, yeah. They went, oh, man, it's good to meet you, blah, blah, blah. I love you, brother. And so that was my entree into working with cats in Chicago. And so before you know it, I mean, literally a month after I started doing that, I got a call from one of the guys I had met, a cat named Tim Gant, who is a bad keyboard player who still lives in Chicago. He called me up and said, hey, man, Carmen Stokes is sick, and she can't do this gig at the Jazz Oasis tonight. Can you come in and sub? I was like, dude, I'm on my way, you know. And that was the beginning of me working with Tim and Richard Patterson, who's now playing bass with everybody from Roberta Flack and David Sanborn. I had Oscar Seton on drums, who's playing with Lionel Richie, who's played with George Duke. I had Jerry Johnson on guitar, who's played with some of everybody. I had Steve Cole, who is a jazz recording artist, a smooth jazz recording artist in his own right. He was my sax player. I had Pam Gann on keys. I mean, and so I just decided, you know, if we're going to do this, let's give ourselves a name. And I thought of the name Fast Forward. So it was Kevin Whalen and Fast Forward. And we used to just gig around the clubs, you know, on the weekends. And buddy, in all humility, I got to say, we were bad, man. Golly, it was, I was so blessed to walk into, because these are the top cats in Chicago, all right? This is not like, you know, JV. This ain't junior. This is not the junior varsity. These were the starting five in that area. And, I mean, my first band experience was with these cats, and we used to do a show, and people would be there till 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it was crazy. We would start at 9 and do about 3 sets and end at about 4:30, and people would still.
Wow.
That's how you worked back then. You had to pay your dues. You had to hone your craft, and boy, I mean, it was so much fun. It was so much fun back then. Yeah, I remember that.
Wow. Miss those days, huh?
Well, you know, I kind of do. I don't miss the pay, but I do miss the vibe.
Well, I want to get into the One Life to Love CD, and definitely tell us about this CD, the producers on there. You have some great producers on this, and one awesome singer in Lynn Fidmont. So tell us a little bit about this CD.
Well, thank you. This CD was produced by George Duke and Rex Rideout. I know you know who George Duke is, but some of your listeners may not know that Rex Rideout produced Layla's last record, Delph Porter. He produced Lettucey's last record. And so you're talking about a cat who knows what he's doing. And so I was able to. George has been a friend of mine since 1998. And when we first worked together on Kirk's first Gospel According to Jazz CD. And we've been like, you know, brothers ever since. And so when I was being courted at the time by a particular record label back in 07, and George heard about it, and he told me, he said, look, if you have any issues with them, you let me know. And he's like, you let me know because I'll produce you, and we'll get it done, and blah, blah, blah. Because I had told him when they asked me who I wanted to produce the record, I said I gave him one name, and it was yours. And, you know, being able to sit with somebody who has so influenced me on a musical level and on a spiritual level, this is a strong Christian man, was just a godsend. And I went out to start writing with him and sat, you know, he's got this incredible studio at his home that he's had since the early 70s. So it's all seasoned and broken in and got all, you know, all the sweet spots and all of that, you know. So he writes in this cubby hole over in the corner where he has his keyboard set up and his computer screens and everything. So I go and take my seat over in the corner next to him for the first day of writing. And I'm prepared to sit there and just let him tinkle around and just, you know, okay, I'm feeling that, let's follow that and see what comes of that, blah, blah, blah. I mean, because it's George Duke, you know. I'm like, what am I going to say? So I sit down, and he puts his hand on the keyboard, and he says, all right, what you hearing? I'm like, I beg your pardon? I said, man, just play something. I said, just play, and I'll come with you. He said, man, this is your record. I will never forget that statement. As simple as it was, it let me know who that man is. He's a man who is so confident and comfortable in what he's already done that he's willing to take notes from, you know, from somebody who, comparatively speaking, has not reached his heights. And I was so humbled by that, and it taught me just how humble a man he is. So I started singing this melody I had. And that's how we started to write. So everything that you hear that he produced on our record, I mean, we did three originals and one cover, but of the three originals that we did, those were my songs. Those were songs that I gave him to play. And I was ever grateful for that because he allowed what was in my head to be represented on my record. Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, the first song I'm going to play is Wonder Maze, one of my favorites on this one. Tell me about
that
song.
That was produced by Rex. Yeah, that one was produced by Rex. And we used, it's a tribute, first of all, to two of my musical heroes, Stevie Wonder and Frankie Beverly and Maze. And so when we began writing this tune, he said, you want me to put Mike on this? And I said, Mike who? He said, Mike White. I said, dude, Mike White is Maze's drummer. I mean, so how more authentic could you get? You know, so he put Mike White on it. He put Melvin Lee Davis on bass and Daryl Crooks on guitar and Lenny Castro on percussion. I mean, you know, just ridiculous stuff. And then I produced the vocals on this tune, and it was Kim Mott, Nerva Reddy, and Mark Kibble from Take Six, who was a really good friend of mine. And so, yeah, we had a ball. Just fun return to the groove, because radio now is all about beats. It's all about the hottest beat, you know, and doing that thing just ad nauseum. And I just wanted to take it back and redefine the groove, because nobody can groove harder than Maze or Stevie Wonder. You just don't hear it. Now, there are groups who do it, but you don't. Unfortunately, they're not allowed on radio. Like Mint Condition, I think, is a ridiculous talented group, but we don't hear them enough. You know, you got to be Lil Wayne. You got to be some young D's there. You know, you got to just be talking about nothing to get on the radio. So
That's so true.
We just try to have integrity, and we just try to go about it the right way and to bring the groove back. And it reminds you of going to summer picnics or the Black family reunions and all of that stuff back in the day, and just being outside with all your family and friends, and that's the kind of music that is.
Wow. All right. Well, we are talking to Kevin Whalum. His current project is called One Life to Love. You can call in and speak to Kevin on 646-716-5485. From his CD, One Life to Love, this is Wonder Maze.
I told you. Dr. Groove, Mike. We're going to talk about my heroes. Frankie Beverly, Stevie Wonder. I'm bringing back the groove, baby. Here we go.
If you're anything like me, then I'm sure you will agree when I say that I miss it. Yeah. So I came here to fix it. Yeah. The way the groove just used to feel so good, and the DJs would do all they could.
George Duke says about Kevin Whalen, Kevin is butter. He really understands how to phrase a lyric and swing a melody. I like that song. Love that review.
Yes, that was nice. Very
you know, I appreciate it. And to have him say something like that, you know, even though we're close and I can call on him for just about anything, it still gets to me because it's George Duke. Mm. I mean, you know what I mean? he's just a bad, bad, bad man. Have you heard his new record called Deja Vu?
Yes,
we had him on when it was released.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, that tune, You Touch My Brain, he did that live on this cruise we just did, this Capital Jazz Cruise. And I want to tell you, it was just greasy. So it's just grease. Grease.
Grease. Mm.
Grease.
Yeah.
Like
speaking of the cruise. Sad back. Speaking of the cruise, I want to let you know that Tamara is in the chat room, and she was on that cruise, and she says she enjoyed your performance every night. She saw you three times, and she said she really enjoyed you.
Hey, Tamara. I appreciate that, my friend. I really do. Thank you so much.
That is so cool.
All right, we have a phone call. I'm Cheryl. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. Hey, Cheryl.
Hey, Terry. Hi, Mike. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Cheryl. How you doing?
I'm good. And I have a question for you, Kevin. You listed your influences from everybody from your father to Phoebe Snow. So you have a wide range of people that can fit in between those two. But you also included like Ella Fitzgerald, Al Jarreau, and Bobby McFerrin, who are also scatters. And with you doing scatting, I was wondering if you got any of your vocal style as far as scatting from these artists, any tips or anything you picked up from any of them. Have you ever performed with any of them? Well, except Ella, of course. But,
right. thank you for the question. Sure. I think that any jazz vocalist worth his or her salt can go to a well of influences of those people you just mentioned and just draw something from them. I was so heavily into Al Jarreau when I was a kid that when I started listening to him when I was like 9. I think that's when I heard the Live in London CD, I think it was called Live in London, I can't remember, the one with Take Five on it, and I started memorizing it at 9. I was memorizing his solo in that song, and I happen to know for a fact I had to be the only 9-year-old in Memphis concentrating on Al Jarreau to that degree, and not only in Memphis, but in the ghetto of Memphis. You know, I lived in the area called Orange Mound, and it's the hood, and I make no apologies for it, but I was in my bedroom listening to him and Sly Stone and Edgar Winter and Graham Central Station. I was so into this stuff, and when I got to be a teenager, I'll say about 18, I guess when I left for college, I made the conscious decision to stop listening to Al Jarreau. And I had to do it. I had to, because I was beginning to hear him creep into my performances. And I couldn't have that. I mean, how will you ever become your own voice if you mimic somebody else? And it wasn't even conscious, Terry. It was a subconscious thing. But because I revered him so, he would creep in. And I said, okay, I got to stop. Because I was starting to hear you, meow, meow, meow. I'd hear that nasal thing creep in, and I said, "Okay, I gotta find my own voice." And so I stopped listening to him, and it wasn't until I was almost 30 that I was comfortable enough in who I became to go back and start listening to his stuff again. And I have sung with him. He probably wouldn't remember this, but. His former musical director's name was Chris Walker, a very talented singer, songwriter, and bass player. And they did a gig here in Nashville, and he came. I was backstage, and Chris said, "Man, you ought to come up when he does the, you know, certain song medley that he did. He just come up and grab the microphone in the background." I said, "You sure?" Oh, yeah, he'll be into that. So I guess I can say that I have sung on the same stage with Al, but I don't think he would remember that being who he is. But, Ella Fitzgerald, to me, is the pinnacle of scat. Her voice, to me, was as precise and true and confident as any instrument you'll ever hear, as any Oscar Peterson solo you'll ever hear. I mean, it was that exact. She was that rooted in the groove and in the swing of what the band was doing that she just played with them. She was just another instrument. And she didn't even have to know the lyrics, as I'm sure you know about the Mack the Knife song that she made famous for forgetting the word. And she just kept it going, you know. I mean, she was like, she even added the line in the song, "This is the song I don't know," you know. And that kind of freedom affected me, you know. And so I tend to have that same liberated spirit when I'm on stage, because when every time a person performs, there is a mistake. There are mistakes made, and that's part of the live performance. That's what you want to happen. You don't want everything to be pristine. You want
perfect.
There to be some reality, some realism. And so, you know, somebody hits the guitar player hits the wrong chord, or the drummer forgets to do this, or I sing the wrong lyric, you know. And we just laugh about it, and we make an issue out of it for the audience to know it's okay. We're human. We're up there having a good time. We hope you feel that. And when you talk about my influences, as far as scat goes, you're talking about Ella, you're talking about Sarah Vaughan, you're talking about Mel Torme, you're talking about, of course, Al Jarreau, and let me tell you, you're talking about John Hendricks, who in my opinion is the most undervalued, under-discussed singer of the last 70 years. I mean, he was a beast. He was a beast. I think he's still alive, but I think he's in his 90s now. But you remember Lambert Hendricks and Ross, the jazz trio, and he made famous this style of singing called vocalese. And vocalese was taking established musical solos and adding lyrics to them. At whatever breakneck pace the solo was played, he would put words to them. And, I mean, he's just, I don't know of many people who can do what he does.
Now, you also list some very interesting influences in John Cleese in the Monty Python show and actor Kelsey Grammer. How did they influence you?
And Gregory Hines. I think that you can be influenced outside of what it is you do. I'm a musician, singer, songwriter, performer. But in a way, those guys were musicians. They improvised. They scatted, but they used scripts. And, John Cleese is, bar none, just a genius of a writer, of an interpreter of material, deadpan humor, intelligent wit.
Yes.
He did a show called Fawlty Towers.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
He did not.
I love
that
show.
Wait, check this out, though. He did 12 episodes of that show. That's all that has ever been done. 12 episodes. And it is by far the most perfect run of any sitcom on either side of the planet.
Yes.
And you're talking about
totally
1975.
Agree.
It's absolutely
totally
flawless. And it was recorded live. I mean, he was a guy who could take a moment and just everything from the ministry of silly walks to you know, just being able to slap Manuel in the head, to not be able to take blame or to work very hard. Never be embarrassed. I mean, to be embarrassed to him was the worst thing that could happen. So he would just put lie upon lie upon lie upon lie to save face. And it was, I mean, here's a guy in the service industry at a hotel, no less, who hates his clients, who hates every customer that walks in the door,
That's a funny show.
They get on his nerves. I mean, that's just genius from the beginning. And as far as Kelsey Grammer goes, he's a guy who played one character for 20 years and who never learned his script to the point of memorization. He learned about the script. He would learn what the script really was about, and they would unleash him as the leader of this ensemble to play. He didn't have the same constraints, I should say, that the other people in the cast had. It was his show. But this guy would learn just enough of the script to know what the sum total of it was about. And then he would take the rest of it and just use the moment on stage to decide what he should say here. Now, that is jazz. That's spontaneity. Mm-hmm. That's coming off the cuff. I'm in Gregory Hines. I could go on forever about him because I feel in some way connected to him. And I don't dance. I don't tap dance. But I met him the night I graduated from Morehouse at a restaurant in Atlanta. It was a Japanese restaurant that my father had taken me and my girlfriend to. And he walked in, and I almost lost my mind. I said, Dad, that's Gregory Hines. So I made my way over to him sheepishly, and I know it's against the rules, but I guess he figured he was a young kid who, you know, I'll have pity on him. He was very gracious. He shook my hand. And that was all I needed to do was touch him to say that, all right, whatever he's got, I got a little of it on me now. And I think about him a lot. I have a lot of his YouTube videos saved, and I just go to him from time to time just to see what he was going to do. You know, what did he do in this moment? You know, and his legacy has been carried on brilliantly by Savion Glover. And Dulé Hill is a great tap dancer as well, the guy who plays on that TV show Psych, the black guy.
I haven't seen that. All right, I have a couple of phone calls for you. Let's start with area code 206. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Why, thank you. And thank you for answering the phone. Kevin, first off, I do want to say thank you very much for being on the show. I'm going to keep this one real quick. my name is Cheryl. Can you say that like 12 times?
Cheryl.
Hey, got it. You're wrong. I'm wrong. Okay, here's my true question. I've been just inundated with Teddy Pendergrass tonight, so that's where my head is, and then I came into this room, and I'm like, ugh. But here's the jazz, and it's typically sung by females. You're My Thrill. Can you do that one, maybe? Yes, I did.
Can I say that? You're My Thrill?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know that one. I don't know that one. Who sings it? I'm sorry.
Dang, I'm embarrassed now. I think Ella sang it. Like, it goes way back.
Also, it's a standard.
I can't read the room because it's, you know, that. it's typically a female song. So, of course, I'm going to say, well, let's flip it and have, you know, a male sing it. And that's kind of where, song.
Girl. I guess I should know it, especially if it's a jazz standard, but I guess that one got past me somehow. I got a bunch of other ones in my head loaded and ready to go, but that one.
Let's hear. Okay, all right. Okay, what do you got loaded?
No, I don't know. Me. You gotta come up with something.
Oh,
I told you guys, don't give me the phone number, man. Next time I ask for the phone number, just give me some phony one.
Okay.
Kevin, thanks again for taking the time out of your schedule to come on to the Queen's show. That's what I'm going to say. But you know what?
Okay.
Song up. Man, you can kill it. I swear you really
Thank
can.
You so much. I appreciate you, Cheryl. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling
Bye.
In.
Five U's. Thank you. She's so funny. Area code 615. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you,
Hello?
Sinead? Hi.
This is Willie.
Hi, Willie. Welcome to the show.
I am a big fan of that Kevin Whalum dude. I'm right here in Nashville, Tennessee, and I heard him do that Bill Withers Use Me, and I just love it.
I think I know who this is, but Willie must be the name he's using tonight. I'm not, since he's using Willie, I'll say it Willie. But
What's up, man? This is Joe Johnson. How you doing?
Everyone, this is a very good friend of mine. This is Joe Johnson, a very talented saxophonist in his own right, recording artist in his own right. And he's from Memphis, Tennessee, but he lives here in Nashville, and we have worked together countless times. And that's why I knew exactly who this was, because this man is insane. I'm telling you that right now. If you don't have his music, go check out, is it joejohnsonmusic.com, Joe?
It is, yeah. But it's not about me, man. I was just calling to tell you I'm proud of you, and you my dude, and, you know, it's good to have you on the show and stuff like that.
Listen, Joe knows exactly when to call me, because he tends to sense when I'm running low on cash, but he'll call me up and say, man, come sit in with me, and I'll tell you something tonight.
Uh-huh.
Next thing you know, I got rent money. I got gas money.
Wow.
Well, that Kevin Whalum, he is something.
This is my friend, y'all.
Goodness.
And we're gonna have this idea that a friend of ours named Adrian Granderson, AG for all you Nashvillians on the radio, came up with called Saxon Soul. We're gonna take that thing on the road
mm-hmm.
one of these days and.
Mm-hmm.
Come to your town, Kevin and Joe, Saxon Soul.
Yes.
He's
yes.
An album
well,
Saxon
I had that. Joe on the show already talking about that and everything, about the Saxon Soul show, so that's
okay.
Definitely
cool.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm glad, I'm glad you identified him because I was like, Willie, okay.
Once I heard him speak a little bit, I knew who it was because I know the timbre of his voice, and this boy's insane, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, man, I don't want to take up your time.
But
I just wanted to tell you congratulations again, man. You know I'm proud of you and I love you. And hey to Terry and Mike, and I'm going to get off the air so I can listen and some other callers can come in, man. I'll hit you up tomorrow, dude.
Do that, man. Let's grab a bite this week.
Okay, we'll do.
All
right.
Yep. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Okay, cool.
All right, bye-bye. Wow,
okay,
that was cool. All right, now I want to get back to some music. And do you have a question, Mike?
No, I was going to say the same thing. I guess I'm not
curious. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This next song I'm going to play, Kevin, I call it the Mac song. It's the Dig You song.
Oh, okay.
Because you are macking, you are macking hard on this song.
Well,
you
look,
are macking hard on this song.
I had to represent the brothers in Memphis. That was a song for all my boys in Memphis who grew up the same way I did. Just, you know, rolling to the mall and looking at women. You know, as teenagers, that's all we did. That's all we did. If we weren't hanging out at somebody's house or at a movie, we went to the mall and just walked around. And well, when they opened up these little coffee joints, man, that was it. We were just there. Looking at girls, trying to get phone numbers, you know. It was just a great, innocent time. So that's where all this. It's called Big You.
Big You, a.k.a. the Mac song from Kevin Whalum's One Life to Love.
You don't know me, and I don't know you, but I was checking you out. You walked by me a minute ago, and I almost passed out. Smelling good, you're looking fine. Hey, you intrigued me. I was just minding my own business, walking through the mall. And here you come walking past me, and I said, oh, she know she fast. Brothers, all y'all out there, you know where I'm coming from. We've all been out at some place and boom, just out of nowhere somebody walks in, some woman, and she's just, well, she catches that eye. You dig? Anyway, this is that sister. So I'm thinking I'll sit back and check her out a while, see how she does her thing, see how she makes it swing. Cause I ain't in no rush, I'm just chilling, walking through the mall, just killing time, holding up this wall, while I'm feeling her. So I'm just gonna dig her. Now, back to you. Yeah, I'm digging you. I hope you're digging me too. I hope you're digging everything that we might do. I hope you're digging my boy Eric's groove. I hope you're digging my words, digging my body, digging my mind, digging my approach, digging my soul. Cause I got plenty of it, and I might just let you have any of it. See, I got it honest. I'm a Memphis brother. M-E-M-P-H-I-S. No stress. Oh, sugar, you're just a blessing. Something lovely to dig this afternoon. Ooh, we owe me watching you move. You fine as all outdoors, girl. I ain't lying. You too nimmy not to hear me. Thanks, PJ. Fine as the day is long. Uh-oh. I done made you laugh. Girl, you don't know the half of what I could do with you. But right now, I'm just gonna dig you. Cool? I'm just gonna dig you. As long as you in this mall, time won't matter at all. Cause I'm straight digging you. I'm straight feeling you. And I respect your space. That's why I'm not all up in your face, grabbing on you like some do. I ain't trying to follow you home. It's all about the time we've got together in this mall. If I give you my card, I think you'll call. I'm gonna sip on this latte. Cause I'm gonna spend this part of my day just by digging you. Yeah, I'm just gonna dig you. So go ahead, do your thing. Shop with your girls, but just be noticing that I'm digging you. Oh yeah, I dig you. Feel this groove. It'll make you move. Cause that's what I do when I'm digging you. I make you groove. I make you move. What I do when I'm digging you. Well, ain't you sweet? So you like this beat, huh? Yeah, that's what I do when I'm digging you. I think you're gonna give me a call sooner than later. What you think? Oh yeah, I think I'm digging you. Hey Rod, blow him something, bro.
I like that one. Yes, indeed.
Oh, thank you, man.
Numbers. Yeah. And you know, Kevin, it kind of reminded me of Coco Brown's song, the Sundress song.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm familiar with Coco. He's a friend of mine, but I don't know that particular song. And, man, Coco is a very, very skilled spoken word artist. He really, really is. And, if it sounds anything like him, I'm taking it as a compliment.
Yes, indeed. That's hot. Kind of thing. And you know, I want to go into, you know, you released your debut CD back in 2003 called Timetable, which was one of Chris Rizik's of SoulTracks.com, one of his favorite CDs. Now, going into this CD, what did you want to accomplish with this CD as far as your first one? As compared to
I wanted to strictly just have product, like. You know, I had traveled for so many years with Kirk, and I'd come off stage, and people would say, "Man, do you have a record? Oh, not yet. You know, back then I was still waiting to get a record deal, you know. And I finally got to the point where I just said, you know what, I'm going to do a record on my own. I'm going to pay for it out of my pocket and just do what I know how to do, you know. So I hooked up with Rod Magaha. I don't know if you guys know who that is, but okay. He's an exceptional trumpet player, and he lives here in Nashville. And, I mean, you want to talk about outside the box. Here's a cat whose brain works in a just completely different way. When he's writing songs, he can do anything. He really can. And so I hooked up with him, and he produced it. He let me do it at his studio, and you know, it was just one of those bohemian things where there was no money to of any consequence. No money that's going to change the tax bracket, especially if it's coming out of my pocket. You know, and. So I paid him, you know, the best way I could, and I would feed him sometimes, give him this and that, you know, to compensate. And it was just a great time for being original and creating. And so I just, my mission on Timetable was to put something in somebody's hand. I was tired of watching money walk away from me. And, And so when I was traveling with Kirk, he allowed me to sell my CD right next to his. And as you know, anything that helps the bottom line, especially when you're married with twin girls, is a beautiful thing. So that's kind of how I went about it. And a few years later, the One Life to Love showed up. So there's a very severe sonic difference. There's a sonic chasm, I'll say, between the two of those records. I mean, the first record, I'm proud of it because it was from inception to shrink wrapping, it was all me. But you know, it doesn't have the mix on it that it needs to sit on the shelf next to something like One Life to Love. You know, I mean, when I got to One Life to Love, I had reached the big leagues as far as production and mix engineers, so they, you know, a mix. This is something for all you artists out there. If you're gonna spend any type of money on your record, make sure that most of it goes to the mix engineer, because a mix engineer can take your music and make it speak. Okay, he can make it speak to the listener, and he or she is trained to do that. They sit behind the console, and they bring levels up, and they bring levels down, and they mix things in, and they take things out, and they make your record sound as good as it possibly can. And I'm telling you, we just didn't have the budget for that on the first record, so it sounds like it. It actually, to me, it sounds like a demo, but it still speaks to the purity of the creative process, because I was able to have an idea one day, write it down, record it, and then sell it. And that's all it's about.
And you know, what you're saying, that leads me, you just talked me into another question, which would be, from then, from your debut CD to now, what have you learned being an independent artist? What have you learned from being with your brother and the other people that you've toured with, that getting your music out there, getting your music heard? What have you learned I guess, tips or things like that to try to, you know, get your music out there being an independent artist?
Well, that's a changing question, Mike. It changes weekly, because with the advent of the Internet, which has been largely a benefit to people like me, it has also been a challenge, because now you have to think outside the box on a daily basis. Because the technology is so swift, it's like buying a laptop, but it's more severe, okay? It changes quicker than laptop technology. You know, if I buy a laptop today, 2 years from now, it'll still be a pretty good laptop, but there will be something out there bigger, better, faster, who does it a little differently. But you're talking about every week now in this industry on different ideas on how to get your music to the people and to be paid fairly for it, because people are just, you know, downloading stuff for free. And you know, you have to just keep up. You have to be willing to give and give a little here, but stand your ground here. The record label as we know it no longer exists. I'm willing to bet 85% to 90% of your listeners have not driven to a record store to buy a hard copy CD in quite some time, because it just doesn't go like that anymore. You don't get out of your car and go inside a record store and look around for an hour like we used to when I was little. But it's all about downloading now. And so you have to find a way to sell your music, you know, one song at a time if need be. Or, you know, put it on a zip drive, or, you know, make a necklace out of it and hang your zip drive on it and have people buy it like that, so they can get home and upload your CD with pictures and everything onto their computer, and that's how they have your record. I mean, it's just, everything is just new. And so with everything in flux, it's hard for me to answer that with any kind of static reply. Because I'll say today is one thing, tomorrow will be something else. So I'm just trying to hang on, brother, and write good songs. And I guess the one thing that I'll say that I've done is try to remain true to who I am. I think when you try to be who you're not, you know, I'm not 20. And so if I tried to sound like I was 20, it wouldn't work. Because it's not who I am, and I wouldn't be able to sell it anyway, because you would be able to feel that I was fake. So as long as I'm doing what I believe in, I may not sell a million copies, but I don't want to say I won't, but, you know, if I don't, and I sell 50,000 copies, and all the money comes to Kevin, that's a whole lot better than selling a million copies with a nickel coming to Kevin every time the CD is sold. Okay, so I'd rather take 50,000 copies at whatever price point and have that times 50,000 come to Daddy, as opposed to, you know, a dime or 15 cents of half a million copies sold. You know, would.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I own my masters. I don't have
there
to
you go.
Sign them away to any record label. You know,
that's
so,
right.
It's a different ballgame right now.
That's true. Sir, are you with us? Okay.
Kevin, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm having some audio difficulty. You guys are sounding really garbled. So Law Talk is working on it now and trying to fix it.
Okay.
Is go to another song. I wanted to play the song that Lynn fit on singing on. So would you tell us about this song?
Oh, sure. I wrote this song. This is called Why, and this is one of the ones that I wrote with George in my cubbyhole. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. In my cubbyhole, I asked George to give me my own version of No Rhyme, No Reason, one of his greatest songs. And he did so. And if you listen closely, you will hear strains in these chords that are reminiscent of his No Rhyme, No Reason. So as I wrote it, I had Lynn's voice in my head. And I wrote the lyric for her part, knowing that I was going to give it to her. And when she came in and did her part on that song, I want you to listen to Mike, there's a section in the first hook where it goes why, and she does this moan, this sigh,
okay,
right in the middle of it, right in the middle of the hook, and I want you to hear it now. And when the song ends, I'll tell you about that moment. But this is a song called Why, and it's about relationships gone bad, and then those same two people meet up some years later, pick up where they left off.
Oh, okay.
Okay, from Kevin Whalen, One Life Love CD. This is Why, featuring Lynn Sidmon.
Do you do have
Okay, that was Why, featuring Lynn Piedmont, Kevin Whalen's One Life Love. All right, that was really nice. I like that. I am still having issues on my end, but I'm told that that should be okay, so I'm just going to go with it until Blog Talk fixes the problem.
Okay, I heard most of that.
Okay. All right. Kevin, tell us about, now you mentioned that you guys had lost your father earlier. In 2007, and there's a song called Softly and Tenderly. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm sure you guys know that's a gospel standard, and it was one of his favorite songs. And the story behind me recording it is this. I was going to dedicate the record to him regardless. But my father passed away from complications due to stroke, and he had had upwards of 35 mini, M-I-N-I, strokes. And finally, once he had a big one in the summer of 07, and that's the one that finally took his speech and impaired his movement severely. And he hung on for a few more months, and then he passed away in October. October 13th was the day that Kirk and I recorded his Gospel According to Jazz live concert DVD in the Maryland area. And we, you know, he made sure that the audience knew kind of what we were dealing with, and you know, we were praying for our father and whatnot. And a week later, the Lord called him home. I still had one song left to record on my record, and it was going to be something else. When he passed away, I decided in the 11th hour that I would record that instead. And it was no question the most difficult performance, just logistically, you know, when I was in the studio, and on the song, by the way, playing with me is a magnificent writer, composer, performer, pianist by the name of John Stoddart, and he's playing piano. Marcus Finney is on drums, and my nephew Kyle, Kirk's son, Kyle, is on bass. But I had sung the song at his funeral, and I decided that I would record that song on the record as my last song. And I sang through it in the studio. We recorded it three times all the way through, and it literally was a session of about 90 minutes. That's it, because I couldn't do it anymore. I sang through it three times just so we had things to choose from, three performances of which we could, you know, make a value decision. And I cried my way through that entire 90-minute session. So I think you will hear raw emotion in this. If you play it, you don't have to, but if you do, you will hear raw emotion. You will hear crack notes that I didn't bother to go back and fix, because I felt like that was what needed to be heard. It was raw. It was real. It was therapeutic. And it was, you know, me saying a final goodbye to my dad, who I absolutely revered.
Wow, okay. All righty. Now, your CD timetable focused on three loves, faith, family, and music. With the release of One Life to Love, are you still focused on these same values?
I'm sorry, I gotta ask you to repeat the last part. With the release of One Life to Love, what now?
With the release of One Life to Love, are you still focusing on the faith, family, and music value?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I have a saying on my website and on the record itself: love hard, love well, love hard, love now, and and it is, you know, kind of who I am. You know, you got to love who is in your life, and you got to tell them you love them, and you have to make sure they understand how much you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Love on them hard. Love on them well. Love on them now, because you're not promised tomorrow. I mean, we turn on the TV every day to stories of little kids being abducted and doing searches for bodies and you know, all kinds of, all manner of just sadness. And, you know, I can only say that the way my household runs, that we say, I love you all the time. I mean, it's before they go to bed, before anybody leaves the house. You know, anytime there's a separation of, you know, of the people in this house, going to work, going to school, going to church, night, bye, I love you. You know, the last thing we want to hear is I love you, because if something happens, Lord knows that's the last thing I want to have said or have heard in my life. And it's just it's who I am. Everything that I do, you will never buy a record that I do that, you know, is talking about let me lick you up and down, let me flip it over. I'd probably sell 3-4 million copies. But I'm trying to tell you now, if you can't play it in front of your kids, I ain't gonna sing it. And I'm not gonna record it. And, I mean, I'm not saying that I can't write about adult themes. I think that's a valid thing for a grown-up to do. But there's a way to go about it that is palatable, that is, that lets people know that you understand that I have to help you. It's a village thing. I have to help you raise your kids. Meaning, you know, I can't just throw caution to the wind, try to sell a bunch of records, and then have your kids memorizing my curse words. I'm not going to do that to you. So I want you guys to be able to ride in your car and listen to my music and be able to have your kids know my lyrics and it not bother you one bit. That's just who I am. And I'm not throwing off on people who do it the other way. You know, I'm not a judge, and
okay.
God would judge us all. So.
Right.
That's just kind of where I roll.
That's true. Now, Nathaniel, I know you have, like you mentioned, your daughters earlier and everything. Now, do they want to become singers or entertainers like yourself and Kurt?
Lord, I hope not. We got to get some real money in this kind of way. No, I'm kidding. They just performed for me about an hour ago, a little over an hour ago, something that they're working on at school. And, they have wonderful ears. They hear harmonies. They hear, they understand flat and sharp, and they have, you know, really a nice appreciation for kids their age. They're 11 years old, and they love Ella. They love Sarah. They love Bootsie Collins, George Clinton. They love, I play Steely Dan, Bill Withers, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Marvin Gaye, these kids, Al Green, they love all kinds of music and request it from me. And I love that about them, because I'm able to instill in them a higher quality of music, in my opinion, than we have available to us on the radio today. And I love the fact that they're probably the only 11-year-olds at their school who even, you know, have ever heard of Steely Dan. Or who know the words to Saturday Night Fish Fry by Louis Jordan. So, I mean, I'm pickled pink every time that they mention something musical to me. And they do have sweet little voices. I'm trying to get them back in the piano class. I had them in a couple of years ago, but trying to get them back into that. But at least they're singing their whole day away. So can't push them too hard.
All right. All right, well, I'm going to get back. I want to play one more song before we let you go, Kevin.
Okay.
I really like Valentine's Day, so that's going to be the next song. Tell me about this.
This was one of the ones I did with George, and it is a cover of a James Taylor tune, who was another big influence of mine. It's one of his lesser known tunes, but if you know his catalog, you've heard it. And it's actually, he has a very dry wit, James does. And he decided to do a song about the Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago, I believe it was, and put it to this lovely, lovely melody and ballad, you know, this orchestrated thing that he did so a few years ago. And I thought it was hilarious. And everybody that knows him knows that he did it tongue-in-cheek. He knew that people not familiar with the depth of his humor would gloss right over that and think it was this beautiful, this is such a lovely song. But if you listen to the lyric, it's about the Valentine's Day massacre and people being lined up and shot gangland style. It really is a ridiculous premise. But like I said, that's his wit. And so knowing that, I decided to do the same thing, but I knew that some people would not know the story of the massacre and would consider it a beautiful love song. And so I just, at the end of it, on the vamp, on the outro, when the tone changes and it goes to the groove, then I'm talking about, you know, I'm singing to my wife and I'm saying, hey, I've been gone. When I get back home off the road, it's going to be you and me. I'm going to pour you some wine. You know, I want you to wear that red thing I bought you. You know, it turns into just a whole lot of fun, and I hope people get a kick out of it.
All right. This is Valentine's Day from Kevin Whalen, One Life to Love.
Beneath the tide, the fishes glide, fin to fin. Side to side, for fishy love has now begun. Fishy love, finny fun. Paper moon, paper heart, pink balloon, work of art. Al Capone, bugs and ran. Thank you.
see you waiting on me. Well, that sweet little thing I bought you, baby, the red one. You know the red one, baby. 'Cause I'ma bring you to your knees, girl. And you know I ain't lying. I've been gone too long. I just wanna touch you. I just wanna feel you. I wanna see if I can.
Right, that is Valentine's Day of Kevin Whalen's One Life Above CD. And I remember chatting with Kevin on Facebook one day last week. And I said to Kevin, by the way, you can sing.
Bless your heart. I appreciate it. I really do.
Very nice. So, all right, let us know if you can pick up your CD.
Well, if you want a digital download, you can go to iTunes and either type in One Life to Love, or you can type in Kevin Whalen, and that's spelled W-H-A-L-U-M. And if you want the hard copy, something you can hold in your hands, then you can send it. I mean, you can go to www.kevinwhalen.com, and they'll have one sent to you immediately.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kevin. We really appreciate having you on.
Yes, definitely.
I appreciate talking with you, too. And listen, big kisses and hugs go out to my girl, Lynn Fidmont, who also has a new record out called Lady. I'm sure you guys know. And I would love for everyone to go to lynnfidmont.com and check out her record as well.
Yes.
Okay. Definitely. And speaking of Lynn, Lynn Briggs asked me to say hello to you.
Give her all the sugar you have and tell her it's from me.
Okay.
Speaking of hello, Ollie Reed, sex man Ollie Reed, told me to say hello.
Ollie. Oh, cool. Yeah. Tell Ollie, I said, hey, I haven't seen that brother in a while. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy.
All right. Well, thank you again, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Tara. You guys, too. Hey, Mike, good talking with you, and bless you both here.
Same to you,
thank
Kevin.
You.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That was Kevin Whalen. His CD is called One Life to Live. One Life to Live. One Life to Love. You can pick it up on his website, kevinwhalen.com. All right, Mike, we have 24 seconds left. So I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. Thank everyone in the chat room for joining us. And appreciate all of the phone calls from Joe Johnson. Thank you, Jeff and Cheryl. Thank you for all of your help as well. Have been listening to Talking Jazz with your host, the Jazz Queen.
And Mike Littles.
We look forward to talking smooth jazz with you this weekend.